stance. The dice roll every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while. We'll roll in that D percentile.
Hi everyone, it's Dave. Got loads of call-ins to get through. I will, probably early next week, set aside some time to going through and knocking off a great bunch of these. I am grateful for the call-ins. I am going to play and respond to them. It's just been, well, everybody's having a bit of a strange time at the moment. I am actually on holiday, been on holiday for a week, enjoying the sun as much as it is possible to do in my back garden, which is not terribly big. Because obviously we're housebound, we had the idea of getting the kids a trampoline. It takes up half the garden, but it's a way of them getting some exercise. Whenever they go around the friends' houses who have got trampolines, they spend the whole day in the garden on the trampoline. So we thought, why not? And that's working pretty well. They're out there jumping up and down. So that's fun. So this week, I'm not neglecting my Black Hat game. My Black Hat game is still running regularly. It's run at least once a week for weeks, really, with one little break over Christmas, one break when I got ill. Going strong, still open table, running it fairly casual, but I had a bit of a hankering for a campaign, and I've just been increasingly, I've mentioned this much before, but I've been increasingly thinking it's about time I ran a Dark Sun game. It is definitely my... I don't really go a bundle on published settings. But Dark Sun has just got all of the things I want. Real strong sword and sorcery feel. Bit of an Edgar Rice Burroughs feel. And a post-apocalyptic vibe. It's just got it all. In the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition version, it is... It's just unplayable, I think. It's just kind of messy. So I've done my own set of rules based on my super, super, super simple. I managed to hack down Swords and Wizardry Continual Light into 3 pages of tables. I might share some more about that at some point. But I got a whole game into 3 pages of tables. So I got the whole game down basically into the GM screen. And then I've built it back up again, but flavoured very specifically for Dark Sun. One of the things, I couldn't just port the Black Hack into Dark Sun because of the centrality of psionics to the setting. I've come up with some really nifty things, I think, with the psionics, although they're not playtested yet. First session is running tonight. I will probably at some point bore you about all of the with all the various rules and things that I've done for the setting, but I'm not going to do that today. And what I'm going to do today is perhaps the first of a little series, I think. I'm not going to commit desperately because I've not been able to get to the podcasting as much recently. I'm actually being confined to the house is actually, it makes me really productive with my work. I don't have to travel to work for a couple of hours when I go in. So that's going pretty well, and I'm enjoying being on holiday at the moment. So I'm not going to make any serious commitments to a long-running series. But as I'm doing the game, I am going through pretty much all of the old supplements. So you've got, there's things scattered around, all kinds of sort of semi-official things actually on the internet, but you've got a whole bunch of source books for 2nd edition and a few for 4th edition. And I'm going through all of this. I'm basically hacking up the modules. I'm going to be hacking them up for as long as the players are interested anyway. I'm going to be hacking them up in a reasonably, there's a reasonably good order to follow the modules through in. But I'm going to hack them in such a way that even if the players had played them before, I'm sort of, in each case, I'm coming back at the area that the module was set in. So they can play through the, all of the events of the Dark Sun modules. There was a very heavy meta plot in Dark Sun, which is its one downside. They sort of got caught up with the the various tie-in novels they were doing, and the players just became these bit parts in the story of the heroes of the novels. But what I'm doing is, there is a nice little way that you could play through pretty much all of the published modules and into the fourth ed ones. But as I say, I'm taking each module, cutting it up, and then imagining what it would be like if the players turned up a few weeks after the first module was set. So even if they've played them before, the situation's changed. That's what I'm going for. Anyway, as I'm going through these, I'm just having all kinds of thoughts of how they're from this, the second edition one, are from that mid-90s, early 90s period where, I don't know, they had some interesting ideas. So these have got this flip chart format. You've got a flip chart and you turn over the page and you show the players the picture at various points, and then each of the encounter areas just takes up one side of notes. That's all. I mean, that's a quite neat idea. A lot of that was neat and innovative for the time, but still become clearer when I start what I actually want to talk about today. Some of the stuff you've got here is just very kind of mid-90s. Just here's a bunch of events. Here's ways of catching out the players, testing if they're clever enough. And I'm having interesting sort of ideas about how I'm going to redeem some of this stuff. And I just thought I might share some of it. So what I'm going to talk about today is how to redeem trap monsters. And I'll say more about what I mean by trap monsters in a moment. All right, there's some spoilers here for the players if you're listening, but not such that I would really mind you listening. So I'm looking at A Little Knowledge, which is the introductory adventure that you get in the original second edition box set of the Dark Sun world. And it's kind of fun. It's not really railroady. I like the way they present these flip chart adventures. You get all the info on one page and then you get a next box. It actually presented a little bit like Dungeoneer, with various kinds of bits of setup. Each page has got how to open it with the players. It's got your monsters on. It's got events that might happen. It's got, in each case, it's got what the various people might know. Psionix is quite big in the Dark Sun setting, so you've got what they might know if the players either question them or read their minds while they're doing other stuff. It's got a little bit of guidance on role-playing opportunities, and then it's got this box that says next, where to go next, and you've got a couple of options. So it's nice. I mean, it's an introductory adventure. It's a little bit railroady. There are some obvious hooks in there. If the players decide not to take the hooks, you haven't really got a game. And that's certainly not what I'm, that's not how I'm going to run it. But what I want to talk about at the moment is how to redeem some of these encounters. So number six here, you've got the encounter with the Bloody Tamiris. And then number seven is Cactus Food. I'll talk a bit about Cactus Food first. So the first time the PCs enter an area of Stony Barrens, you show them the player aid card depicting some cacti. And then there are these three different types of cactus. Basically, each of these different types of cactus is a different kind of trap. I mean, there's not much you can do with these. I think these are traps that you basically just don't spring on the players. You know, one of the things is, okay, so you've got Purple Bull. Upon being struck, this cactus oozes a clear liquid. It's a deadly toxin. Anyone so much as tasting it loses 1d4 points of constitution. Then you've got Writhing Mass. If this cactus is chopped open, a slimy worm shoots out, tries to entwine the closest living being. If it scores a hit, it continues to shoot out the cactus, entwines the victim's legs, tripping them. Then it mummifies them and suffocates them. Striking the cactus again causes more worms to shoot out. Tree-like cactus, the third one. Anyone approaching within 4 feet of this cactus is subject to D6 attacks by the cactus's animated limbs. This cactus, at least, tree-like cactus, can at least provide half of a being's daily water requirements. But basically with each of these, purple ball, writhing mass, tree-like cactus, once they've been encountered once, they kind of lose their magic. The player either knows to avoid them or is aware of the trap that they provide. That's kind of fine, but in Dark Sun, you start off third level. It's one of my games run slightly differently, but I'm keeping the principle, which is that the players are already hardened explorers. Many of them are going to be, or some of them, sorry, are going to be rangers or druids or other characters that are supposed to have wilderness knowledge. And whereas I'd quite happily put something weird and alien in a dungeon, which was just there to, you know, sling out some kind of tendril player and suck out their brains, it seems kind of mean putting plants in the desert which are just there as traps. You kind of think, what I'm going to do is that these will be, they might provide a nice first time trap to a group that hasn't got a ranger or a druid or some other character type which is supposed to be proficient in the in the desert. But I think if I have got any of those character types, I'm just going to describe, I'm going to let them know what the trap is. More on that in a minute. The Bloody Tamiris then. I'm going to read some of this. Use this encounter, it says, a day or so after the attack on the caravan wagon, once the PCs realise they have a desperate need of water and while they're still in the sandy wastes. Remind them how hot and thirsty they are. There's even a picture of the desert to remind them how hot and thirsty they are. The tallest PC sees a thicket of vegetation a mile distant. It's nearly a half mile across. From its centre glistens a scintillating silver reflection. Hooray, water! The thorny bushes grow most densely over the silvery reflection. It's 30 yards in diameter and resembles a pool of water. Further investigations it takes you. Most tests suggest the reflection is caused by a pool of water. It splashes if something drops into it. It ripples if a breeze runs across it, etc. The bushes themselves have a drab grey-pink tinge to them. The thorns are each about an inch and a half long and barbed. There's a whole page on this, just this one encounter. Should a PC think to break one off, he or she discovers a small hollow passage inside it with a tiny hole in the end. Use of appropriate proficiency reveals only that the plant is not poisonous, not what it is. There you go. So even if your characters, even if they are psionic or got some magical means of finding out about it, even if they are a ranger or a druid or any other class that might be supposed to know about the wilderness, they've never heard of this one before. A careful study, well lit, of the ground inside the thicket reveals that there are bones scattered throughout it. So if they do their investigation, they'll know to be wary. All right, getting to the pool. The bushes grow directly out of the pool in the centre, oh, that's in inverted commas just for the referee, of the thicket. It's impossible to reach the pool without going through the thicket, even by flying above it. On one side of the thicket is a narrow 3-foot tunnel. You know, even by flying above it, you have to describe that carefully. So the thicket, somehow they've spotted the pool, but somehow the thicket grows over the pool. You can see how this trap is really meant to catch the players out. On one side of the thicket is a narrow 3-foot tunnel leading towards the centre. There's just this one narrow 3-foot tunnel. PCs can crawl down it or use their weapons to hack one of their own. Once they have passed the halfway point on their way to the pool, the thorny bushes rapidly constrict. There we go. Around the PCs, sticking each character with D6 times 10 thorns. No attack roll needed. As the Tamiris sucks their blood, the PCs suffer 1 point of damage for every 10 thorns by which they were struck. They can easily hack their way free of the bush, but it takes one round per 100 feet they had advanced. Once outside of the bush, the thorns continue to suck blood until they are dug out of the skin, which require one round and does a total of 2 additional points of damage. After the attack, well, you can burn the plant. The Tamiris has no treasure. The pool in the centre of the thicket is actually a thin layer of sap covered by an oily residue that protects it from evaporation and gives it its silvery sheen. It's not drinkable. So you can see, you can see why this is here. It's an interesting non-monster encounter. And I think this is an introductory adventure. It's showing you that Dark Sun is a pretty evil and fatal setting. But it seems to me to be a waste of a good trap beast. I mean, the first thing is, once the characters have encountered this, they'll never go near it again. And the second thing is, I don't think it's right if you've got these expert characters, some of whom are meant to be, you know, at home in the sandy wastes, that they would never have heard of a plant like this. I mean, as I say, if it was in a dungeon, or if it's a one-off rare creature, this is the only instance of that creature ever, well, then reasonably they wouldn't have encountered it before. But if this is something which grows in the desert, then I think intelligent, proficient desert travellers ought to already know about it. So how do you redeem it? Right, so I've got, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm not just going to be mean and sucker my players with it. If I've got players who have got any kind of proficiency in the sandy waste, if they're supposed to be able to know their way around the sandy waste, I am going to tell them about this plant when they see it. It is the bloody Tamiris. This is what it does. So that's the first thing. I'm not going to just sucker them out with it. I can see why you do that in an introductory adventure. It's fun to sucker out the players, but their characters should not be suckered out with this plant if it is something which, even if it is rare, naturally occurs. As I say, if it's a one-off strange alchemical experiment, fine. But I actually like the idea of having these pop up around the place on encounter tables. So how do I redeem it? I don't think there's much to be done with the various cacti, although I think I could apply my two bits of guidance that I'm going to apply to them. But definitely to the Bloody Tamiris, here is how I'm going to redeem it. And I think this is a way of more generally thinking about trap plants, trap monsters, you know, these things which work as an encounter, but they only really work the first time you sucker your players with them. All right, so maybe I said two things. I'm actually going to do three things, three little rules. Number one is don't sucker your players. So number one, I've already mentioned this, but I'm going to make it one of my rules, is actually just if your characters should reasonably be able to know about this, just tell them. You know, it's kind of fun to say, ha-ha, you've crawled in, you're halfway, and now you're going to get stabbed by these things, you're going to start drinking your bloods. But I think players will reasonably kick against that. Hold on, I'm supposed to be desert-hardened, I'm supposed to know about this kind of stuff. So now I actually think if I haven't got a druid or a ranger or some other kind of character that's supposed to know their way around the sandy wastes, I might sucker them with it, and then it's worked once. And it's kind of fun. And then they've maybe learned that they need that wilderness expertise in their party, or they need to hire someone who has that expertise in future. And that will be a learning. But if I've got those characters already, I'm not going to sucker them with it. So that's number one. Number two, here's where the rules get useful, I think. Make it a gamble. All right. There is two way I would change Bloody Tamiris to make it a gamble. You can see what the way they've set it up. You're really thirsty. You need some water. Oh, look, there's some water. It's in amongst the bushes. Even though you're finding bones and stuff around the bushes, you really want your water. Well, you know, that one little line which says it's not drinkable, it's just sap to look like water. That's a bit mean. So let's have our Bloody Tamiris, one way or another, sometimes grow around a real oasis. In the absence of a real oasis, it creates its silvery sap mirage. But where it can get one, it grows around a real oasis. So we've introduced the chance. Maybe I'll do it on a D6 roll. But we've introduced the chance when they get to the end that it's actually water. There we go. That's one way of making it a gamble. Now, even though they know the creature, even though they know what it could do, it's still worth them crawling in. The other way to make it a gamble, of course, is to just scratch out all those lines which say it's automatic, there are no rolls. Yeah. If we've established that it's worth gambling because there might be water, the next thing we do is we make the actual passage through the bushes a gamble. So now we introduce some kind of relevant proficiency roll. I'm thinking of doing it on the move silently roll. So only certain characters are going to be well set up to actually do this. Your thief characters or your various sort of ranger types that have a move silently role. So there we go. We've made it a gamble. There might be water. It's not automatically. They know that sometimes they grow around sap. There's no way of telling until you get there. I mean, if they've got cool spells or psionics, why shouldn't they work out whether it's got water or not? You know, why be mean for the sake of it? Then they've overcome a trap monster. Well, they haven't overcome it. They've overcome it in the sense that they haven't wasted their efforts on something which doesn't lead to water. We've made it a gamble, and also we haven't made all of those attacks automatic. We've given them a reason to want to engage with it, even though they know what it is, even though they know the dangers. There could be water, and they could, if they roll well enough, get through without being struck by it. So there's two rules. Number one is don't sucker them, tell them about it. Number two is make it a gamble. Make it worth their while risking encountering it. Number three is just a simple make it interesting. So for my Bloody Tamiris, I've introduced a D6 roll. Six different ways that this could be interesting if it comes up on an encounter table. Number one, there's a creature trapped in it. Okay, so there's something in there already. Now, it's up to you to choose the creature. It could be a creature the players might want to help. It could be a creature you just roll. I mean, it's interesting enough. It becomes an interesting bit of desert dressing if it's not just a Bloody Tamiris, but it's got some big creature thrashing around in it while it's having its blood sucked. So that's number one on the D6. Number two, there's a creature hunting near it. That could set up some interesting situations. Perhaps the players lure the creature into the thicket. Perhaps they are in danger of being cornered or somehow pushed back into the thicket by this other creature. Number three, have an interesting item be glinting there in the middle. There is some object of interest which might incline them to risk engaging with it if they didn't need the water, perhaps. Number four, there's a creature. This is Dark Sun. It's got psionics all over the place. So a creature is luring the players into it somehow by illusion. Again, perhaps setting it up so there's something in there they might want to rescue, or an object, or perhaps something beyond them that's driving them into it, but by illusion. Number five, it's the only shelter. Now, this might require a little bit of contrivance, but you just need to think about the environmental conditions. They find themselves stuck without shelter in the heat of the day, or perhaps they're in the sandy waste. Maybe a sandstorm whips up and they need to take shelter, and that's all that is offered. And then number six, the players are heat crazed. If all else fails, make the gamble more attractive. Take away their water. I should perhaps say some more about two and four. I've said there are these creatures hunting near it, but here we've made a virtue of this trap monster being a little bit more common in the sandy wastes. If you're inclined to find this around the place, then it would make sense that other creatures which you're inclined to find around the place might develop symbiotic relationships with it. So creatures might benefit from using psionic powers to somehow lure or drive characters into it so that they could pick off what remained after they'd been exsanguinated by the plants. So there you go. The Bloody Tamiris and the Dark Sun introductory adventure is a good example of one of those trap monsters with which you sucker the players the first time, and after that they are pretty useless. So my guidance is don't sucker the players. Tell them about it. If there's a reasonable chance they would know the trap, let them have that information. Number two, make it a gamble. What you've got to do here, you've got to give them something that's worth their while, something to entice them to engage with the trap monster, and you take away all of the automatic harm. So you give them a roll and you make it worth their while to risk that roll. And then number three, have a nice little D6, making it interesting table. You chuck anything else in there alongside the trap monster and suddenly you've got an interesting encounter again. I hope that was useful. Give me a call if you've got any thoughts. I look forward to hearing from you. All right, so I'm going to do a quick addendum. because I've run the first session and the characters actually encountered the bloody Temeris. Now, the way that worked is when I've gone through and I'm chopping up these modules, when there are incidental details, I mean, I can distill down a one-page encounter into two lines on an encounter table, and that's what I'm doing. So the Bloody Temeris just went onto the encounter table. When they're exploring, what I'm saying is if I roll a D6 basically for each unit of time travelling, and if they roll a 1, they just get one of the beasts off the encounter table, and if I roll a 6, then I give them one of the special encounters. So this is one of the special encounters, more tied to a location. So on this journey, they're only going to come across this once. And one of the bits about the gamble didn't really pay off because I rolled it really early. It was their first hour of travel they came across this, so they weren't stuck for water. A couple of days in, they really were stuck for water. So the resource management was kicking in. But one of the things I enjoy doing is I like my random tables, so and then I like giving over a lot of the order of things to the random table. So this was when they rolled it and they weren't thirsty, but then I added in, you know, I wanted to make it a gamble, I wanted to make it count, so I added in a creature that lured with its psionic abilities, but they weren't buying it. That's kind of fine. So that was how that encounter went. So I told them enough so that they, you know, it was pretty obvious that this thing was going to try and suck their blood, and then there was somebody trapped in it, but because it was a psionic illusion, I rolled for the players. Some of them made the save, some of them didn't. So then some of them were seeing and hearing the creature and some of them weren't. So they weren't buying this at all. And there was a little bit, I think, when they decided to burn the bush and some of them could hear the trapped person in the bush screaming, I think there was a little bit of anxiety about that. But basically they saw through that, and that was how that encounter went. And I think that was kind of fine. A lot more things I want to say about the first session, but I'll do that in a later episode.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter at d_percentile.